Tonight on the Goblin's Corner.
Custom spell.
Yay!
That's how we roll.
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 Welcome to the Goblin's Corner. My name is Eric.
And I'm Matt.
And tonight,
we're doing custom spells.
That's right.
We did some stupid spells before.
It's true.
But now we're going to talk about actually making custom spells and why you'd want to.
That's right. And, you know, the custom spells that we made, the stupid spells, I guess it would be called best, were just something fun we put together. It was a little thing that we lit upon, and it was very popular. People wanted more custom spells, and we will get to that as well at some point.
Oh, yes.
In some other episode that we don't really care about. But right now, I think it's important that you guys know how to make custom spells for your game.
Absolutely.
And that's how it works, right?
Yep.
But before we get to that,
question of the week time.
We do have a question of the week. So, Matt, what's the question of the week this time?
So, this week's question is, pick a character you've made.
Any character, right?
Any character you've made. If you had the time or inclination, what spell would they have invented to really showcase who they were as a person or as a caster?
Well, if I'm going to pick a Shadowrun character, actually. I'm going to pick Woody, my full-blown 100% termite insect shaman. And I'm going to say he's going to make Woody's version of Urban Renewal. It's going to be called Woody's Infestation. And so it is a manifest-style Urban Renewal spell. And for those of you who don't know what Urban Renewal is, Urban Renewal is very simple. It's one of those spells that destroys shit. Everywhere. It just destroys shit, right? It destroys buildings.
It's like a block, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like a whole city block just completely destroys.
It makes nature reclaim it.
You could say that, or it just breaks stuff. So I'm going to say it's a bit of a stylistic one like that, except that I would say instead a plague of insects invade the building or the city block and tear it to pieces. And it would not only destroy the building, but it would also call the local authorities, the housing commission, and they would shut the place down.
Do they really need to shut the place down if it literally falls apart?
You never know. I mean, they could set up a condo or something, put a slash of paint on it.
Sure.
What about you? What would be your custom spell?
Hmm.
And what character? And I know, Matt, if you look at his eyes, he's going through the Rolodex right now, going, damn. I've got 40 years of characters in my head. Yep.
That's exactly what I was doing. I think, honestly, it probably would have been Smudge, my goblin artificer.
Oh, yes. What was his fake name that he made to get into that fancy dress party?
Smoo of Swer,
yes.
Which is short for Smudge of the Sewer.
Sure. Very dapper goblin, though.
In fact.
What would be his signature spell?
Dominate Construct.
I could see that.
We had so many construct problems. That is 100% what he would have gone with.
Warforged would hate you.
Oh, no.
That's true.
They started the fight. Warforged tried to murder him over and over. And he didn't start that.
Good point.
So screw him.
Screw him. Yeah, screw him. Do you have a Warforged or perhaps a custom spell that you would like to share with us? Write to us. info@goblinscorner.com, or you can reach me, Eric@goblinscorner.com, or
me, Matt@goblinscorner.com.
And of course, you can find us on all the things, including now
YouTube.
That's right. We are now on YouTube for those of you who happen to be watching this.
Hi, folks.
I'm sorry, we have faces for radio, and that's just how it is. So
it's going to be that way.
Yeah. Fucking deal with it. All right. So let's get into the nitty gritty here. What about custom spells? So first off, and I know this sounds like something that could be, anybody could think of this. What exactly is a custom spell?
It's a spell that's designed by or for the players or a specific NPC. I mean.
There you go. There's your Wikipedia definition.
Yeah,
that we should put that on Wikipedia because we just made that up.
Well, it's true.
It is true.
But it's also true.
It's also true. So there are a lot of reasons why people would make a custom spell for their game, regardless of the game, right? It doesn't matter whether you're playing World of Darkness.
Yeah.
I mean, Mage technically is all about nothing but custom spells.
Yeah.
You can, and going back on that also, what is it? Ars Magica? Mm-hmm. The game Ars Magica is great with custom spells. But you could be playing D&D. A lot of people, apparently it's popular, guys.
I've been told.
I have too. And you could also play something like GURPS or any Shadowrun, of course.
Any game that has spells.
Any game that has spells.
It's so many. Starfinder, to me, is a great game for custom spells.
Sure, because there's so few spells in the game that you should probably make some more.
Well, not just that, but because you've got the technomancy and the fantasy side of things, you just go wild.
Go crazy with it. Just go crazy. You know what? I'm just be crazy. Something.
Just in general.
Just in general, yeah. To be crazy in general. All right, so custom spells are great for all sorts of things. And for example, it's great to add flavor or any type of option to the game world, and that just makes perfect sense because if you're making custom spells, then you add more flavor.
All the flavor.
All the flavor, baby.
Human.
Yeah. It enhances storytelling, and overall world building is another example of that.
Yep. It's a great addition for players that want something besides standard loot.
Yeah. And this is something that you can add. And we mentioned this a bit when we were talking about stupid spells, too. It's something that you can just add. And as well as custom magic items is another good example of something like that, too.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of fun to mix it up.
100%.
Get something a little bit nutty. Maybe something that is more flavorful. And it doesn't have to be powerful.
No.
It can be something that's just out there.
For me, it's a good way for players to personalize their characters. It's another way for them to tell their story through their magic.
Absolutely. So how does one create a custom spell, Matt?
Well, first off, obviously, it's going to depend on what game you're playing. But for just general basis, right, you can either modify a current spell.
Yep.
Or make one from scratch.
And either of them work very well. Obviously, modifying a current spell is easy because you're just changing stuff. And I can use an example. I'm sure you've got a couple of these. But one of them is if you got Fireball, changing it to Ice Ball or Cold Ball or Poison Ball, super easy to do.
Sure. Especially if you have spells of each component.
Yeah. Now, creating one from scratch is pretty easy as well. You just have to know your particular system, your mechanics, you know. If you're talking about D&D, the DMG has a bunch of stuff. If you're talking about Shadowrun, they've got stuff on making their own spells. White Wolf's got a whole bunch of stuff. And honestly, even if you don't want to read any of the rules, we've got a couple of handy tips just to make it from a thematics aspect as well.
I mean, the first thing you need to do is try and work out the details if you're a player, and then just run it by your GM. And have them make adjustments as needed. Your first level spell cannot deal 5d12 points of damage.
Regardless of the game.
And yeah. There literally is not a system where that works.
And if there is a system that starts off at 5d12 points of damage, please send
us know.
That. Yeah, I want to know about that. What kind of deadly-ass game is that? That would be kind of fun, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, that's much more real life, right? If you get shot, you're dead.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's kind of the same.
It's called Murder Finder.
Murder Finder?
Yeah, that's next on Paizo's list.
Yeah. I could see that. So once you've made your modifications or you've made up your spell, then your storyteller, your game master, your marshal, if you're playing Deadlands, whatever, DM, would compare it to spells that work out according to the level and make sure there's an essence cost or a component cost or somatic material. You know, if you have to eat a spider or dance with the devil by the pale moonlight.
Sure. So
decided I'm going to use Batman references tonight.
Oh, it's a Batman night?
It's okay. It's a Batman night, guys.
All right. So one of the things for, I know for D&D, I believe it's also true for Pathfinder. If you want a spell to be more powerful at its current level, then throw some money at it.
Yeah.
If it requires a costly spell component, then you generally get more bang for your buck. It just costs you more bucks.
Yeah. Another option you can throw in, and we've got a couple of these too, is that you could also throw in experience or time. Or so a good example of that, like if it is something that is immediate, it may do less damage than something that takes a full round or an entire hour to cast.
100%.
Yeah, that Urban Runos will take out the city then. That's going to be my spell.
Damn it.
It's just going to be called, it's just citywide renewal. Just block after block after block is just being leveled.
It's just going to be called reclamation.
Yes. It'd be awesome. All right. So one of the things that we go into, and I think that as a storyteller, you need to kind of think about, or as a player, if you're making your own spells, is how do you research these spells? Because it's not like, I mean, you can look in the book and go, well, this is what the game says, but you want to make this a little bit more fun. Like, this is a perfect example of thematics, storytelling. Remember, guys, we're all about that story.
Right.
So what could we do to make this a bit more interesting?
Well, first off, you've got to, you have to decide how you're going about your research. Are you a trial and error type character?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
I am.
Yeah. Occasionally that's going to blow up in your face.
Sure.
You have, I mean, it's literally called trial and error.
Fair enough. And, you know, you can get rules for researching spells. In fact, a lot of games have that.
Sure.
Some don't, though. If they have them, most of the time, they're not particularly interesting.
Right.
They're very mechanical from what I've seen.
Sure. But those are just the mechanics to fill in the narrative.
Bingo. And this is where we're going with this, is I think that we should have some additional elements to make things more narratively fun.
Sure. So you already mentioned it, but if you're researching something simple, like just what type of damage a spell does, that should determine how easy or hard it is to do. Because if you've got Poison Bolt and Fireball, and you're trying to make a Poison Ball, then it should be relatively easy to research that spell.
Or a Fireball that is poisonous and shoots out, like when it hits the blast, actually does shrapnel of poison. That would be fun.
Sure.
I'm just saying that's what I would do.
Yeah.
Then again, I'm all about some Fireball too. Another good example is, what kind of materials does the researcher have? So for example, a library.
Sure. That'd be super useful.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So you could use that mechanically to cut down cost, or you could use that thematically as kind of a mini adventure, roaming through the haunted library. You got to go down into the dungeons, got to defeat a lich who's got a whole bunch of books because he's a hoarder. Maybe one of those big ass rock. In third edition had those gigantic rock grubs.
Yeah.
What is it? They're like large sized creatures. Maybe there's one that's a bookworm, like this giant worm that eats books and people. They eat people too.
People books.
This book tastes delicious. It only eats smart people though, so the barbarian's fine. Unless you have a smart barbarian.
A smart barbarian,
yeah. The smart barbarians are uncommon.
Dark but dangerous. But
deadly. Deadly.
The last thing you want is a smart barbarian.
Damn straight. You could have a high level mage.
Sure. As a mentor. You could have somebody who's willing to help you out with divine intervention.
Oh yeah.
But both mechanically and like thematically.
So something like like a planetar or something?
That would be super helpful. I need a planetar.
I'm just thinking like, you know, divine inspiration.
Well, I was just thinking clerics can offer you guidance for your research roles.
Sure.
And, you know, mechanically, that's divine intervention. But there's also literally, in 5th edition, divine intervention, which is basically a miracle.
Your deity just drops a notepad.
Yeah.
It's just nothing but like divine sticky notes.
Here's where you went wrong. There's just a big red X on it. It's all wrong.
You know what'd be hilarious is if what's the deity of knowledge in the Forgotten Realms? Is Ugma?
Ugma.
Ugma. Yeah. just like an entire spell formula is written on a dinner napkin. I could totally see that just appearing. What's this dinner napkin? Oh.
Yeah.
That'd be fun. And again, great opportunity for the DM to interject some storytelling. We talk about a mentor. What if you had to hunt the person down? Because let's be honest, if you're wise, you don't want to be around other people anyway. That's why you're up on top of a mountain.
It's so true.
You know, you have to fight a whole bunch of griffins and
yetis.
Yetis and beholder sharks. I know.
You're just going to run with the beholder sharks. It's all my fault.
You got to use your Batman utility belt to grapple. The Joker's, you know, trying to cut your lines the whole time. And all you want to do is get to the top of Mount Gotham.
You're turning this into a vertical platformer for spell research now?
Maybe so.
Okay. Sure.
So, but, you know, whether it's a high-level wizard, whether it's a high-level cleric or any type of summon creature, arcane or divine, this is a perfect example. What kind of research do you have? Now, in addition to that, we touched upon this already.
How powerful of a spell are you working on?
Yeah, you just making like a puff of smoke, or you Snoop Dogg smoking out a room?
Right. There's a very big difference between filling a square and filling an auditorium.
One's a cantrip and one's
a career.
Yeah. Fair enough. I like that. Sure. Also, the purpose of the spell. Damage, control.
Giggles.
Yeah, well, I mean, damage and control tend to be the ones that I go for. Utility is another good example.
Or giggles.
Giggles are great. Is the change simply cosmetic?
Right.
And in which case, if it is...
For me, it should be free, and it shouldn't take long.
Sure, because if a fireball is a fireball, but you want it to be a bunch of flaming skulls...
So what?
Now, if you adapt it a little bit and say, okay, instead of just fire damage, it does fire and bludgeoning damage. So what? That's called a flame strike. Wouldn't it? No.
That would be fire and radiant. But if you wanted it to look like flaming skulls, then it probably should be fire and necrotic.
You don't think bludgeoning damage? Because...
Well, bludgeoning would also work.
I'm down with necrotic and flame as well, but I think the bludgeoning damage would be fun. Get beat in the head with a skull. He bashed his head in with a flaming skull. That'd be awesome. So think about that. Think about that as well. Making a fireball explode into Paisley matters to Hamblish the Paisley Mage, but has no bearing on mechanics in any way. I love this. And I want you to play Hamblish the Paisley Mage, by the way.
I will absolutely.
He has to be colorblind, though. That's why he wears Paisley. He just sees nothing but black and white patterns. That'd be hilarious as well.
That would be even more fun, because that means I don't even know what color the spells are.
He should cast chromatic spray all the time.
Just... doesn't matter to me.
But it needs to also have the Willy Wonka patterns with it. It'd be great.
But yeah, if once again, that has no mechanical change to it. A Paisley fireball, it's funny. But, I mean, unless you're the one hit by the fireball.
It's still funny then. You got hit by a Paisley fireball. Especially if it burns Paisley.
Little Paisley flames?
Yeah. Where'd you get that scar? Well... It's a Paisley scar. How did that happen?
See, what happened was...
this is mage.
But trying to make an entirely new spell would obviously be more difficult than just changing the looks of another spell.
Sure.
It takes time.
Mm-hmm.
It takes money.
Money.
And how you develop the spell is going to be the sliding scale for that, right? Like you said, if you've got a mentor and you've got a library, then it's going to take both less time and less money.
Sure.
Unless you're paying the mentor in the library.
I agree with that. So something that we mentioned earlier, and you kind of, we elaborated this on mentoring and whether you have divine inspiration or a library or whatever, but I'm all about waiving the cost of developing a spell if it all comes down to adventuring. So let's say you want... Let me put that into words that actually make sense.
Sure.
So let's say you have the Paisley spell you want to develop, right?
Mm-hmm.
Paisley Ball. It's going to do Paisley damage of some sort. And it's a different type. It's probably force damage because it's forcing you to look at the Paisley shades. Maybe a little bit of enchantment charm and evocation on that. But you want to develop this. Now, according to whatever rules you're doing this, say we're doing this in D&D, it's going to take time.
Sure.
It's going to take cash money.
Yeah.
But I would, as a DM, rule to waive that and say, go on a quest. You have to go track down the Paisley Beast.
Really?
And slay it. I don't know. It's or something. Or go look in the archives of the unforeseen. Maybe it's a part of the far realm that all kinds of skewed, weird
sure.
geometry and colors and patterns exist. And it happens to have a book. And when you open up the book, there's a chance that you go mad. But there's that Paisley spell written in it. Because I don't wear Paisley. Standard issue black shirt. But that would be a great adventure to go on it. And it would be hilarious.
Sure.
So you've got the fun. Now, granted, if you're playing something more serious, do it anyway. That would be my recommendation.
Right. Because you need a break from seriousness also.
Absolutely. But there's all kinds of things you can do in terms of, and we'll get to these after the break, in material components and time, rituals, sacrifices, all this other good stuff. But adventuring is the key. And this could be something like an epic level spell, or maybe not even epic, like a pre-epic spell that the whole party could get in. So let's say like the big bad is, I don't know, someone who's always monochromatic, the monochromatic bad guy.
Sure.
And they're taking over towns. They're turning everybody gray. There's no more patterns, guys.
Boring.
Very boring. So you have to go on a quest to interject more
can
flavor.
Can you imagine Highlanders with no tartans?
No, I cannot.
It's a sad world.
That's a sad world. It'd be very boring. Everybody look like Utilicults.
Utilicults? Nice.
Utilicults.
I knew what you meant.
But you
I
know
also
what?
Heard
you
what
know
you
what?
Said.
I'm keeping it. Utilicults also is acceptable in my game. So, oh, God, this could be one of those nights. All right. So think about adventuring. Maybe supplementing the cost. All right. We're going to get to a little bit more about putting together custom spells, and we may even provide a couple of examples, but we'll be right back.
In just a moment.
If there are any topics you would like us to cover, goods or services you would like us to review, or if you would like to sponsor an episode, we would love for you to contact us at info@goblinscorner.com. See you there. And we're back.
Welcome back.
All right. So when we last left off, we were talking about custom spells, how to make them.
And how to research them, how to
interject a little adventuring back and forth.
Yeah.
And now I think we should go more into some options that you can use to make custom spells. So hit me. What do we got?
Well, first off, material components.
Okay.
Right. So a great deal of spells and a lot of different systems require material components.
Sure. Yeah. A little bat guano for some fireball, a little spider web or even a spider leg for spider climb.
Molasses for slow.
Oh, yeah. Forgot about that.
Oh, I could play this game for a while.
I bet you could. You know, didn't you have a spell component cookbook at one point?
Yes.
Yeah.
Obviously, you've got your bog standard favorites, right? Which is anything that's thematically appropriate for the spell. Okay. You've got your gems of various prices, sizes,
sure.
powdered, la-di-da. What about if you're doing a custom spell, you require some custom material components?
Such as?
Well, you got, what about monster parts?
Yeah, well, monster parts are great for everything.
Delicious.
And delicious. You could probably eat an ant keg. I mean, people are eating cicadas now, so you might as well.
Hey, they're probably delicious.
It probably tastes like crap. Or shrimp. You don't think it does? We think an ant keg would taste like.
I think I thought you meant the cicadas. Okay, no, yeah.
No, cicadas take
Cicadas are going to be sour.
Yeah, cicadas taste gross from what I understand.
Oh.
I've just been reading all the stories about don't eat the cicadas. All right. I don't want to eat them anyway. Ugly ass bugs. Monster parts would be great. So you have something like fleshed stone.
Yeah.
A piece of Medusa, right?
Sure. Or Gorgon.
Or Gorgon. Yeah, that works as well.
Which ought to be the same thing, but isn't for certain games. D&D.
Yeah, it's because of copyright, probably. You don't think so?
Somebody copyrighted Greek mythology?
Who knows? It's probably because, you know what
it is?
I mean,
you might be right anyway. Somebody very well may have.
Yeah, so monster parts are great, right? You can use all kinds of different monster parts, and at some point we'll talk about monster parts.
Oh, yeah.
Toxic chemicals are great. Yeah. It's all kinds of different admixtures and alchemical formulas. Some of them should be flammable.
Oh, yeah.
Some of them should definitely be deadly.
Acidic.
Or just poisonous in general, like mercury.
Sure.
Play with some elemental mercury. It's fun. Don't play with elemental mercury, kids. Don't do it.
Yeah.
You can, but we don't recommend you do it.
Because it will make you insane right before it kills you.
Not the elemental mercury.
It produces gas.
Not the elemental mercury. It depends on the mercury.
Really?
Yeah.
Look
it up. Yeah. Some of it, no, to be fair, if it is absorbed into your skin, it will kill you. Some of it. Because if it binds, we'll get to the science lesson some other time. Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah. So toxic chemicals are great. Now, gems are another good example of that. So you could use something like particular gems as the material components. So for a summoning spell that is earth-based, maybe a geode, a summoning spell for some other type of elemental, like I would say fire, maybe like something igneous.
Sure.
Or even a ruby because it's red.
Sure. Garnet.
Yeah.
Carnelian, what have you.
Whatever that happens to be. And those are just a couple of examples, but you could use semi-precious metals or a bone, that'd be kind of cool. Like different types of bone or carved elements, runes.
If you wanted to do a spell that was specifically against, say, Fey,
mm-hmm.
obviously you should have some cold iron powder or a cold iron nail or...
Or even silver.
Sure.
Yeah, stuff like that would be great. And, you know, let's talk about stuff that nobody ever thinks about. So, for example, I mentioned runes. What about cards?
Sure.
So, material foci would be... like tarot cards that you dole out,
yeah,
which would be great. Imagine in the middle of a battle, this person just kind of sits cross-legged, starts laying out a spread, and all of a sudden this wall of fire appears. That would be awesome thematically. And from a storytelling aspect, that's really cool. Which, by the way, there's a character that does that in Fairy Tail too, the anime.
Oh.
That you've never watched.
Correct.
Okay.
On the list of so many things that I've never watched.
But I know some of you have. So check that out. Canna, I think. Anyhow, speaking of which.
So, depending on the spell, right? Material components are things that get used. Foci are things that do not get used.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to have them to cast the spell. So, if you're going to do, say, a teleportation circle, you have to have a teleportation circle.
Yeah, you got to at least draw some chalk.
Yep. So using that theory, you could get into some kind of geometry magic.
Oh, yeah, that'd be nice. Or symbolic magic.
Yeah.
Mirror magic. I think mirrors as foci would be really cool to have.
Oh, you could take a little page from James O'Barr. Just draw out a giant flammable crow and then cast a spell and... freaking phoenix pops up and roar.
Oh, yeah. So a little bit of illustrative magic.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's lots of really fun thematic things that you can do, and they don't have to take any more time from a mechanical perspective. They don't have to really be any different in terms of cost. They're just flavor. Storytelling stuff.
Yes.
And some people may not even care about this, right? But if you're playing... with your character in mind, and there's a lot of people now that are playing games specifically for the story.
Yes. Which I...
Thank you, Critical Role. It's the only reason. Let's be honest. They're the reasons that did it, right? amidst all the other podcasts that do this as well, but this is a great example for your character to stand apart from some other magic using character.
100%.
You got a dwarven runesmith versus an elven, I don't know, scrimshaw. No, wizard.
I was thinking literally
whittler.
A whittler.
Yeah. Yes, elven whittler. He's just an old elf.
He's got my day.
Yeah, because they don't really grow beards, but then maybe he's got like a couple of wispy. Yeah, the elf could grow a beard. Who cares? But I, you know what? Yeah, the elf's gonna have a beard and it's gonna have like overalls. Just sit on the porch, rock back and forth, and just make a bunch of
cup of hot tea. Just back in my day.
Yeah, have some Werther's Originals. That'd be great. I'll play a crusty old elf. That'd be great. Collaborative magic is another good example of something that you can make. Now, second edition had a lot of that, and did third somewhat.
Yeah.
And of course, we're talking D&D here, but other systems also
offer that option.
Yeah, and this is a great option because, again, this gets not just one character into the mix, but all kinds of characters. And you don't have to be a magic user to be part of a collaborative spell.
That's very true.
So if the cost is life force, any old schmuck can get in there, right?
Voluntarily or involuntarily.
Yeah. Get into the circle. Here's your dagger. Just need you to stab your hand. Don't worry about the pain. It'll go away eventually. Or it could be something where you add spell points into a spell. So if you recall some of the circle magic rules from various editions and I toss in a second level spell. This guy tosses in a first. Someone else tosses in
a third.
Yeah. Eventually it all adds up to whatever that happens to be. And you've got yourself a spell cast.
Yep. And one of the things was for that, it allowed people to cast spells above the level that they could normally cast.
Mm-hmm.
But it required multiple people to cast the spell.
Now this allows your adventurers as a party to cast stuff that they couldn't normally cast to overcome obstacles, but it also means that turnabout's fair play.
Sure.
You get some ritualistic sorcerer mage guilds onto the scene.
Yeah.
Hey, you get what you get.
It's true, but they're never going to get a long rest because me and my party are going to cast Dream/Nightmare.
All day long?
All day long. And just murder people with exhaustion because I'm the devil.
I love that. That'd be great.
How'd you guys kill that dragon? He never slept.
Yeah. Just Freddy Krueger'd him for 3 months straight.
Yep.
All he wanted was a nap. He died. So think about that. Collaborative magic is lots of fun. Ritual magic, we touched upon this as well. Again, there could have some kind of ceremonial aspects. So a sacrifice is a good example of that.
It is. But, I mean, you know, people used to do ritual bathing and ritual fortune telling and all sorts of things. So just take a page from history. There's every flavor of ritual that you can imagine.
Now, ritual casting tends to be longer in most games, which is fine. This is a great opportunity where instead of saying, all right, I'm going to spend the next hour ritual casting this spell. Well, what are you doing, right? If you're with the people that really want to role play stuff out, then this is something that allows you to, well, what is that ritual? Like, what are you doing? Maybe Bob in the corner is doing the chicken dance, right?
Right.
The chicken dance, and he's ho-humming, saying whatever merry tune happens to come to mind. Write your own custom rituals for stuff like that. It's fun. Sure.
And I think, you know, I would love to see the difference between, like you said, Bob over there with his chicken dancing sea shanty versus how even another mage who comes from a completely different scenario would cast that spell. Like if you take Liam and Steiny Hutt, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he's over there singing his sea shanties and chicken dancing, whereas the farmer is preparing the space, right? He's moving stones, and that's part of his ritual because that's...
You might have a bookcaster that's doing something maybe more, I guess, akin to something like Golden Dawn-esque or playing with sacred geometry or whatnot. And speaking of which, you can borrow from all sorts of mythologies. You don't have to just use whatever's in the book. You could borrow, what is it, Egyptian mythos. You could borrow from Hermetic beliefs, all this other stuff. You know, the world's got plenty of that stuff. Or make up your own. Make your own stuff. You know, a whole spellcasting setup tied to balloon animals.
I would destroy.
You actually make balloon animals, which is why I mentioned that. It'd be great. I could just see you tying balloon animals. What's he doing? He's making Wall of Force out of balloon animals.
He seems to be casting for a really long time.
Is that an
I need one more fucking eye stalk for this beholder.
Yes. Is that an Umbrahawk balloon? Yeah, that'd be great. So think about stuff like that. Now, another option, time-based magic. So full moon.
New year.
High tide.
Solstice.
Oh, yeah. Solstice stuff is good. Any particular events are ridiculously fun. And again, this is something that could limit the spell as well.
Yes.
So if it's particularly powerful, instead of making it a higher level spell, maybe just make it that you can't access it except every full moon. Well, that's a severe limitation on using it. Druids traditionally had a lot of spells that were limited because you had to be outdoors to cast them. So you can't do, what was it, Call Lightning, I think was one of them. Can't be indoors and do Call Lightning, which makes sense.
Entangle, you couldn't do indoors, which also makes sense.
I think they might have changed that one, though.
I think they did. Well, I think they've changed most. I don't even know that druids have that anymore. I haven't played a druid for 5e.
It's a lot of bear shapes. Form of bear. Now let me go maul somebody.
Sure.
So think about that. Yeah. So different times are really cool. And it could even be only at midnight, only at a certain time of the day or month or year. Obviously, the more rare the occasion,
the stronger it should be.
Yeah. If it's something only once every 100 years, guess what? I'm going to be trapped in an iron flask until it's time to unstopper me.
Right. I mean, Halley's Comet is every 40 and change, I think.
85 years.
85. Wow. So that should be an asininely powerful cantrip.
That's an epic spell right there, because you may not even make it.
But things like that.
Or you mentioned in here eclipse magic, right? So that might do particular types of effects, not just whether it's more powerful or not, but the effects themselves could be different. So an eclipse might have 50% necromantic, 50% radiant.
Sure. The whole corona thing.
Mm-hmm. And you could also say, in addition to like time-based stuff, location-based magic. So if I'm in a swamp versus a mountain.
Sure.
I wouldn't be in the mountain, on a mountain. I mean, I could be.
You could be in the mountain.
You'd be in the mountain.
You could be a dwarven caster.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He doesn't ever leave his mountain. Very powerful magic.
But yeah, I love location magic. I think it's underutilized in most games. And in fact, I think it's underutilized in the genre most of the time.
Yep. And of course, we could also add, and we kind of mentioned limited use and all that stuff, but we could also add quirks to your spells.
Yes.
Now, I am of the opinion, again, I'm somewhat of a demonic DM sometimes. Hmm. Wish is a perfect example of quirks. You get exactly what you wish for. If you say, make me a cheese sandwich, you become a cheese sandwich. So it could be to the letter of the law. Or it could be with dark intent, or maybe not. And that's just one quirk. It could just be something random that your spell has. So it doesn't necessarily have to be a detriment.
See, for me, like for things like wish and quirks, the further away from the standard usage of the spell and the more powerful what it is you're requesting,
mm-hmm.
the more twisting it becomes.
I see that.
If somebody's like, I cast Fireball. Okay, congratulations. You cast Fireball next week. No, you cast the Fireball.
Yeah.
But if you want to pull the moon from the sky and use it to smash your enemies, I mean, all right, it's on its way. It's the moon 6 planets away, but it'll get here.
Or if you ask for all the gold in the kingdom, then you get all the gold in the kingdom stolen from all of the
right.
vaults.
You literally asked for all of the gold in the kingdom.
Right.
Not to mention, you're going to be buried.
You didn't ask where it was put.
A kingdom is an entire geographic area. All of the gold in the kingdom means the stuff that's in veins as well.
Oh, that's a good point. I didn't think about that. So let's talk about non-detrimental quirks then. So a good example of that is, we'll go back to Fireball. What could be a quirk of a Fireball? Maybe your clothes smolder for a couple of rounds after you cast it.
Sure, just visual quirks.
Yeah, so visual quirks are great. And there used to be a lot of different fun visuals for each spell in some of the books, depending upon what, again, we're going kind of D&D on some of this stuff, but even with the other RPGs, there's lots of different visuals to that. You can add to that maybe a smell.
Sure. If you're casting Lightning Bolt, everyone should smell ozone.
Yeah. Everyone should smell like ozone in the entire line. Or maybe everybody's hair stands on end. If you're casting something with wild magic, there's going to be confetti at some point everywhere.
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 Your fireball erupts, everything burns, and then just a shower of confetti.
Yep.
Everywhere the flame touched.
If I came up with a glitter ball spell, which worked a lot like fireball, but it did force damage and glitter, then not only would it do damage, but everybody would hate you for 6 months afterwards.
So it's...
because glitter gets everywhere.
Fireball and glitter dust, the spell.
Yes.
So, like, we'll say a fourth level spell, because it also creates the effect of glitter dust.
Yeah, but I would say the quirk is antithepy. Yeah, so lots of different quirks you can have fun with. All right, so we talked a little bit about researching spells. We talked about some thematic elements you can bring into your custom spells. We gave you some quirks, some different types of role-playing opportunities, whether it's via with people, with locations, with monster parts.
Yeah.
I recommend all of those. But now, how do you put all of this together?
So, if you're making custom spells, the first thing you really need to decide on is the flavor.
Yes.
Because otherwise, why are you making a custom spell?
Yeah. I mean, mechanically, the mechanics are going to work themselves out. But the thematic element is what's most important with this.
So, you decide on what flavor, mm-hmm. right? You're a glamour bard that just absolutely needs glitter ball.
Every time. I want glitter ball. I'm going to make that for the next spell. My Luckomancer is going to have that.
Okay.
But I seriously think if you cast that, other people should hate you because it gets in all of their clothes.
So it would technically... Oh. No, it's conjuration. So I was just thinking... Glitter dust could work for divination as well, simply because... literally removes invisibility, but it does. It conjures something that prevents invisibility.
From yes.
It. Sorry. My brain just tangented. Okay. So once you've got your flavor,
mm-hmm.
you've got to balance it all out.
Yes. So is there another spell that looks just like it or acts like it, or is at least on the same power level in terms of like what the spell actually does? And how does this affect the game overall? Now, it's fine and good to have spells that are overwhelming in the game. I disagree with people like, no, this is overpowered. Any spell can be abused. Any spell can be abused.
It's true.
You see, look, we see this on the optimization boards all the time. I can break the game with any spell that you give me, given time. And given the opportunity, right? So I'm not as worried about that, but what I am worried more about is how does it affect the rest of the enjoyment for your characters? And then how does it affect the game itself in terms of if that was true, then what else is true?
Right. One of the things you have to consider is once this spell gets into the environment, it is a brand new spell. If it is wildly powerful, it will become wildly popular. other mages are going to want it. And that means they're either going to want to purchase a copy.
Or they're going to steal it.
Or they're going to murder the wizard and take it.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. So think about that. Now, a lot of these other options that we have for putting a spell together, I think are very straightforward.
Yeah, it's pretty simple. What's the name of the spell?
Just name it. You can name it after yourself, or you can name it after what it does. You can just make some name up.
Like your Luckomancer. I don't know if they have a name yet, but the so-and-so's glitter ball. Right?
That's it? Yeah.
Yeah. It's super simple.
What school or what category of magic it happens to be. So some games have categories of magic or schools. So if it's mage, would this be tied to, so for example, force?
Right.
Versus
spirit.
Spirit or, and of course, D&D, abjuration versus evocation and so on and so forth. There's, you know, work within the rules of your game for that. And then what does it look like? Now, I find this to be very important, again, because I don't care about the mechanics of it for thematic purposes. Obviously, for game purposes, yes. But what does it look like? If it's a glitter ball, what kind of glitter?
Right. What color is it? That's yeah, well, I'm going to need to know that.
I mean, it could be a random rainbow of glitter for me.
That's fine. But if it's a random rainbow...
They're all tiny little pieces that have the Batman symbol on it. You thought I was forgetting about that, didn't you?
No, I thought you
were going to go... They're all tiny little batarangs.
I thought you were going to go with question marks, though.
Oh, that would be the Riddler, then.
Right, but if it's a random rainbow, then...
I could be convinced to do that as well.
Or, you know, it could be like a child's birthday party, and it's got little clown faces and question marks and Batman symbols, or...
And in addition to what it looks like, what does it smell like? What does it sound like? What does it feel like?
Does it leave a taste?
It might. You know, you get glitter in your mouth. Is it metallic? Does it taste like peanuts?
It's birthday cake.
Is it poisonous?
Does it's it do poisonous birthday cake.
Poisonous birthday cake. Does it do slashing damage because they're tiny little jagged pieces of metal? Who knows, right? That would be deadly. Again, and does it breed? Because glitter breeds. You can have all of these different type of sensory elements to your spell, and you should.
And we've discussed it's a conjuration glitter ball.
Correct.
Because the glitter stays.
Yeah, it didn't go away. What are some other options we have?
Well, duration. Since we were just talking about that, in the case of glitter ball, duration is...
Permanent.
Permanent.
It just...
Yeah. Or actually, the duration is instantaneous.
That's correct. Your suffering is permanent. What range is it? Either... So... How far away can I cast Glitter Ball and then run after all of my friends realize I cast Glitter Ball?
Right. And at that point also, since you've got a range, what's the area of effect? Can you get it far enough away that you're not caught in your own Glitter Ball?
Yep. Is there a save against getting glitter dumped on your ass?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, there has to be.
Yeah, terrible save. Are there any overall effects aside from looking fantastic?
Well, the fireball portion of the glitter ball.
Yeah, well, yeah, aside from
there's,
that.
There's that little
you
effect.
You might look great, though, afterwards. What's the cost behind the spell? So in some games, you have a material component cost. Other games, you might have some kind of physical strain.
Right. You've got the spell level.
Shadowrun has essence.
Yeah.
Or not essence, but what was it? Drain.
Drain.
Yeah, you just have drain, which is actually physically assaults your body and mind.
Right.
And willpower. Are there particular classes that are allowed?
I think it's normally wizard sorcerer.
Are you talking? You're still thinking glitter ball?
Yeah.
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 Bard.
But I definitely think it's one of the few, like, just truly offensive spells that a bard can have.
You know, I would get rid of the fire aspect for glitter ball, make it sonic damage, but the sonic damage sounds like a kazoo. So 20-foot radius, deafen somebody with the kazoo sound. Can be heard within a 500-foot radius, and then everybody gets hit by glitter.
All right. I can see that.
That's a bard spell, definitely.
But 500-foot radius glitter.
No. 500-foot that people can hear.
Oh, okay.
That you know it went off. And I would say that part of the verbal component is, I'm an entertainer. Glitter. So that's a good example of that. And then finally,
the overall description.
Yeah. So
put it all together.
Put it into a paragraph or a series of paragraphs. It is best to write it in terms of what's happening should anything else occur.
So the way, if I make a custom spell, it is the, say for D&D, right? You've got all your standards, and then it goes to the descriptive paragraph.
Okay.
And then it goes to the mechanical paragraph. Because I think for characters that are actually playing thematics, they're going to want to know what the thematics of the spell are.
And then they want to know what it does.
And then they want to know what it does.
That makes sense to me. Yeah. So there you have it. That's it. Pretty easy to make custom spells.
Yeah.
There's a lot more involved that we didn't probably throw in, but that's fine. But I think that if you want to make custom spells, regardless of the game that you're playing, it should be fun and enjoy it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why you're doing it. Did we miss something glaringly obvious? Write to us. info@goblinscorner.com, or you can reach me, eric@goblinscorner.com.
Or me, matt@goblinscorner.com.
And of course, you can always hit us up on Twitter, because both of us won't shut up on there. So if you really want to get in touch with us, Twitter is definitely the way to contact us. We're on all of the things. As we mentioned, we have a Twitter. It's Goblins Corner.
We have a Twitch. It's Goblins Corner.
We have a Facebook and a Pinterest. Both of those are also Goblins Corner.
We have an Instagram. That's the Goblins Corner.
That's right. And of course, now we are on
YouTube.
Goblins Corner.
I feel like we have a theme.
It's like we're trying to stick to a brand or something. It's
something like that.
Potential. Yes. That's all the time we have for today. Once again, my name is Eric.
And I'm Matt.
We'll see you next time. The Goblin's Corner is written and produced by Eric Holden
and Matt Staples.
Show song by the mighty D20.
This is a Subterranean production.
Basic.